It has been a long week. We talked about helping veterans, the science behind believing what is not true, and the 25th anniversary of the film My Cousin Vinny. So as we do every Friday, we've gathered a group of smart people to help us kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened this week. It is time for The Break Room.
It's been years since the underwater remains of the RMS Titanic have been visited by humans. But if all goes according to plan, diving tours of the famous shipwreck could go on.
If you don't believe what everybody believes, this is like 30s Germany.
It's called super meat. So what it is basically eating meat without killing animals.
Joining us in the break room this week, Georgia State University professor Hector Fernandez, B-Win of Athena's Warehouse, which is a nonprofit to empower teenage girls. Ed Sohn is the vice president of product at Thomson Reuters Legal. And finally, Natalie Dale is spokeswoman for the Georgia Department of Transportation. Welcome, everyone.
Great to be here.
Good morning.
For Natalie's sake, how was everyone's commute?
Just say it was wonderful. Stop talking. Turn
totally
off their mics.
Amazing.
Turn off their mics.
All right, let's start a little far from home. During his recent trip to Asia, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson warned that America might pursue military options if North Korea keeps pushing to get nuclear weapons. Here he is speaking to reporters.
If they elevate the threat of their weapons program to a level that we believe requires action, that option is on the table.
So how worried are you, or are you worried about war with North Korea?
Very much, because North Korea is a gunpowder keg. I mean, technically speaking, the war never ended. I mean, they're still at war.
Yeah, that's not even technically. It is still ongoing. Yeah.
And I visited the border, and I recall, I mean, the tension is palpable. So if you have any sort of conflict, you will automatically bring China and the U.S. in. That's a chain reaction, and who knows where it'll end. I mean, it's very serious.
I'd say, you know, this kind of immediately smacks of an axis of evil kind of comment, you know, that harkening back to
the George W. Bush administration.
W's, kind of proclamation on that. I think that, you know, there's a lot more that you can do in terms of diplomacy here. You know, we saw in around, I think it was 2012 or 2013, six-party talks. There's a lot more to have been done there. I think changing the position on that in a radical way really endangers the region, endangers South Korea substantially. As a second-generation Korean-American, I can tell you I'm very worried about a conflict in North Korea, a military conflict that's being pushed by the United States.
Do you still have family in South Korea?
I do. But I will say that attitudes in South Korea have also changed. You know, some of the old rhetoric around, well, you know, reunification and there's families that are divided across the border. That generation from the war is now kind of fading away. And so you have sort of a refreshed kind of lack of memory of some of that. But nevertheless, you know, there's a lot of trails that were being blazed there from, you know, in terms of economic investment and the people definitely have an interest in not, you know, becoming a war-torn region. So I think that, you know, the United States has to tread extremely carefully here.
B, Natalie? Natalie is like leaning as far away from the table as possible. Yeah.
I don't think you can be more invested than right there. So there's nothing that I could add to that would be any more poignant than that.
Hey, think about your kids.
I think all of those things, but I think also the broader implication for our standing in general amongst the world. Everybody has their eyes on us right now, and our own allies are distrustful of us. So I think we need to be very careful of foreign relations or in our own security. I think a lot of things that we talk about domestically, those things are okay because we have enough people in our country to work on those issues. But when it comes to foreign policy, we don't have a lot of control outside of that. And so I think we need to be very cautious in terms of the decisions that we make because everybody is watching us very distrustfully.
Yeah, you know, just on that note, you don't want to create a proxy war. I mean, the region, destabilization in that region will become, you know, a hallmark that would mark the next, you know, 4, 6, 8, 10 years, whereas stabilization in that region could actually really be an immensely beneficial process.
I want to give the definition of proxy war for those who are not familiar with that term. It is a war that was instigated by a major power, but that major power never actually directly becomes involved. It instigates a war between two other countries.
So in this case, it would be a war between North Korea and South Korea that's sort of in the shadows, a shadow war of China and the United States or something like that. Yeah.
All right. Let's come back home to Canton, Georgia. That's in Cherokee County. Canton has become, as far as we know, the first city in this state that bans the retail sale of dogs and cats.
How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that dog is for sale.
Okay, that dog is not for sale in Canton because, according to the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, about 1.5 million dogs and cats are euthanized in America's shelters every year. Canton wants to reduce that number. So what do we think? Do we think a ban like this could bring down that number?
Yes. Yay for Canton. I think puppy mills should be outlawed. You know, all right. I mean, if we already have enough pets the way it is, I mean, why is there any need to keep on producing animals?
Breeding them, you mean? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, producing them. It's production. They're treated as you know, they're being produced. And on top of that, I mean, if any company, because some people were protesting, right? And they had T-shirts on and everything. And those people worked at the companies that sell all the stuff to take care of the animals. If you want to take care of the animals, it's okay. But we already have enough animals the way it is. So there's no need for more. And on top of that, Americans, I mean, the money we spent taking care of animals, with that, you could feed people in other countries in the world.
Well, my dog needs to be spoiled, though, Hector, so
yeah,
sorry.
Well.
One thing that this regulation doesn't seem to do, and I would like to have seen it have been more specific, is address, you know, there are many responsible breeders who aren't breeding like puppy mills breed, but perhaps they are breeding for show dogs or something like that, where they're breeding, it's they have very, you know, the dog is only pregnant once, and they have one litter. It's not the same thing as a puppy mill, but this regulation doesn't specify that. It isn't specific to puppy mills, and it's overly broad and can affect people who actually do have a dog's best
interest.
How
many breeders do you have in Canton? Like, I mean, for
yeah,
like
a dog
show.
Yeah, you can go across the city lines and be okay.
Yeah, I would say that the balancing the interest of, because I had the exact same thought, like there are some people who might be damaged by this that are not where the law is targeting, but the balancing the interest of all these dogs in shelters and, you know, the negative sourcing practices that are coming against, you know, a small number of businesses that might be. I mean, you can tailor the law. To me, I mean, this is probably the best a city can do, but it certainly, I mean, you can just go across the city line. If the state passes a law, you can go across state lines. I mean, this is going to have to require regulation on an industry level. I'd like to see like a tax or something or a penalty for, you know, PetSmart or whoever's out there that these pet stores.
PetSmart, it assists in the adoption of tens, yeah, hundreds
and,
of
and
thousands.
And that's a great, yeah, like way to kind of lead the industry.
Yeah.
I think even maybe thinking through what kind of incentives we can give people to go to shelters versus buying pure breed at retail. Tax credits. Can we claim our adopted pets on our tax form?
Oh, that's interesting.
That would be very helpful as a dependent, including my 14-year-old cranky dog I got from a shelter. But I also think, you know, really education campaigns about spaying and neutering, and we have to thank Bob Barker for that because he helped with some of that. But I think an education component would be really important because some of the issues are people who don't spay or neuter their pets, and then it creates that overpopulation problem where we're not able to take care of them, and then we have to euthanize. So I think it's probably a multi-pronged thing where it wouldn't necessarily solve the problem with just this one law eliminating puppy mills. I think it's certainly sort of like a meat industry where you have to put the regulations on and there are going to be good breeders, but then at the same time, there's got to be other campaigns and other education around that.
So I know that our listeners have a lot of passionate opinions about the care of animals. So you can let us know what you think. Tweet us at OST Talk or call and leave a message. It's 404-500-9457. Now, speaking of saving animals, there is a new kind of meat that does not require you to actually slaughter animals to eat it. Scientists take cells from chickens and cows. They culture those cells and they grow what seems like a faux meat.
Ew, gross.
Tastes like chicken.
Slimy yet satisfying.
All right, the result is indistinguishable from the meat we already consume.
Slimy yet satisfying.
No, it's not. No, it's not indistinguishable. I know. It's in my head, and I know. I'm distinguishing. I'm distinguishing right now what is real and what is fake. It is distinguishable.
Okay. Which, besides Natalie, who clearly is not going to be trying this meat.
Never, ever. I mean, why would you ever eat that? I mean,
But you're a vegetarian.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't miss the taste of meat, but still, it doesn't detract from the fact that it shortens your life. It increases your level of uric acid. It could potentially
affect your kidney. But that's true of all meat, not just this lab meat.
Oh, this lab meat will do the same thing. Yeah. I mean, if it's meat, it'll do the same thing.
I am a fan of the fake meat. I'll go ahead and say it. You know, and I don't know. I haven't tried it. I haven't gone to a taste test or anything. But I would say that primarily, you know, taking the complete opposite approach as Hector, I'm concerned about how indistinguishable it actually is. And if you can give me Kobe A5, like the top-notch meat in the world, and make that more readily accessible, I have no problem with it. I don't see us being really picky about, like, potentially organ harvesting from animals that, you know, like, might be going into, you know, saving human lives, et cetera, and saying, like, well, that's gross. Like, it's not a real organ. Like, you know, not that that's a similar
thing,
Japanese animals. But
right. But, you know, like, I think that just the fact that it's being cultured shouldn't be – we can easily get over that mental block.
Yeah. Really, the only way I could get behind this is, do you remember a couple months ago when they were talking about a bacon shortage? That we were going to have this big bacon shortage and we were not going to have bacon.
Correct.
Perhaps this would have saved the bacon shortage.
I have two words. Soylent Green.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah. I love fake meat. I will eat fake. I'm not a vegetarian, but I will eat all that Morningside
stuff. I love those spicy black bean burgers. Yeah,
the spicy chicken patty. And so I would be all for fake meat. And we put a lot of terrible things in our body. So...
Would this be another terrible thing?
Is a trade-off?
You know, there's one other thing that actually just struck me right now is that I remember seeing on some documentary someplace that cows are probably one of the leading causes of air pollution.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? Yes. In terms of like methane emission and all that.
Yes, that is true.
And so if we could get the benefit of cow meat without the negative air pollution results, I mean,
is that a win? To India.
Natalie is not convinced unless it's bacon. It is Friday. We are hanging out in the break room. We're talking about puppy mills earlier, and Al Effendi tweets, responsible breeders is an oxymoron. Breeding for shows is bad for breeds. Breeding for arbitrary traits, not health. No breeding. I'm Celeste Headley. This is On Second Thought. We're having coffee and conversation in the break room like we do every Friday. My guests are Georgia State University Professor Hector Fernandez, GDOT spokeswoman Natalie Dale, B. Wynn of Athena's Warehouse, and Ed Sohn of Thomson Reuters. And we want to say thank you to Savannah Coffee Roasters. They donate the coffee that we drink, and you'll find them online at savannahcoffee.com. Okay. This week, while all this other stuff was going on, many people forgot that we were vetting a Supreme Court nominee. Neil Gorsuch testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee. One of his former law school students wrote a letter to that committee. The student alleges that Gorsuch told his class that employers should ask women during the hiring phase about their plans to have kids. When asked about this during the Senate hearing, Gorsuch denies ever saying that to his students, but said the topic does come up in his class.
And I ask it of everybody, how many of you have had questions like this asked of you in the employment environment, an inappropriate question about your family planning? And I am shocked every year, Senator, how many young women raise their hand. It's disturbing to me.
Okay, the student who wrote that letter alleges Gorsuch told his class women commonly trick their employers into hiring them so they can take advantage of both maternity leave and insurance. It was also reported that Gorsuch was surprised that not very many students agreed with him. So what do we think about this? First of all, would you agree that you think this is a problem? Do women do this?
I think I would really love to see the numbers on this, to see how many women take a job and within a year are pregnant, have a baby, and do not return from maternity leave. Not someone who's been at a company for 5 years, decides to start a family, comes back up and decides not to come back after maternity leave, but within a year uses that company for salary, for insurance, and walks. Because I would argue that there, in this world where this apparently happens all the time, although I don't know any women that have done this, but how many men take a job for a salary, for benefits, and then in 9 months leave for a better job? So
That's a good point, Natalie Dale of GDOT. Do you know? Has anybody here at the table know a woman who's done this?
No. And here's the other interesting thing is it's not like we have so many places of employment that have great maternity leave in the first place. That actually should be the conversation. Are we offering people family leave? Because there should be maternity and paternity leave. People should be able to go and spend time and take care of their families. But the reality is, a lot of companies don't even offer this. And we also have an insurance issue in general. So I think he's just completely missing the point here.
Yeah. In the rich world, I mean, the United States offers the worst maternity leave conditions.
Of any developed country.
Yeah. You know, of rich countries. Yeah. I'm not going to call them developed. That's not. All right. But regardless, the problem is that is, you don't even have to question that. I mean, I've never seen a woman do this, you know. Perhaps because we don't know from the conditions. But on top of that, the real problem is that this guy's arriving to the Supreme Court. They live in a bubble. Mm-hmm. I mean, Roberts lives in a bubble.
John Roberts, the Chief Justice.
I mean, Sotomayor at some point chastised him for not understanding discrimination against minorities. And this guy also comes from a very male-oriented, upper-middle-class, privileged, you know, environment. He lives in a ranch. I mean, how much contact can he have, you know, the average, you know, working environment?
Yeah, you know, just on that point, I really agree with that. I think that there is, you know, his comments reflect a lack of
His alleged comments.
Yeah, his alleged,
right,
his
we don't
alleged
know for
comments,
sure.
His
yeah.
alleged comments reflect really a lack of understanding, or rather sort of a perception that's been informed by a very, very narrow experience. You know, Judge Gorsuch and his experience, you know, I don't remember his resume off the top of my head, but speaking to a class of law students, many of whom are headed to large law firms or what have you, maternity leave policies are generous there, and you can't. And so, and to answer your original question, I've definitely known some people who have had suspicious, like, employment practices when it comes to, they are hanging around at their place of employment, they take their maternity leave, and then 3 days after coming back from maternity leave, definitely, like, leave right away. It's happened, but it only happens when that maternity leave is already there, to be generous. It
right.
happens on a very, very, like, small number of cases. I think the other thing that really disturbs me about Gorsuch's comments is that, you know, if you listen to the
alleged comments.
if you listen to the students, you know, sort of retelling of those alleged comments, you know, she's very fair towards Gorsuch as a professor, says that he's always encouraging
debate.
She
wrote it,
et cetera.
Very nice
and then
letter.
She kind of highlighted this as the one area where he demonstrated sort of a disproportional lack of, you know, openness on that view. So I find that very interesting.
Yeah, if you read the letter, it was pretty complimentary.
I mean, I think it's important that we remember, though, that Judge Gorsuch is a controversial pick being vetted right now. And one student out of how many classes has he taught has brought this up. So I'm not sure that we can take this to the bank.
Somebody just tweeted us, Rabbit tweets, I just got back from maternity leave, 6 weeks at 60% salary, had to pay back insurance while I was on leave. I have no plan to leave. Okay, let's move on to Hollywood, where we don't often hear about conservatives. But comedian and actor Tim Allen says being a conservative there is really difficult. On ABC's Jimmy Kimmel Live, Allen compared a conservative's experience in Hollywood to Nazi Germany.
You got to be real careful around here. You know, you get beat up. If you don't believe what everybody believes, this is like 30s Germany. I don't know what happened.
Okay, Allen was criticized for his comments. The Anne Frank Center for Mutual Respect wants an apology. It is generally a bad idea to compare any modern thing to Nazis. But do we think Tim Allen has a point? Would it be difficult to be a conservative voice in Hollywood?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I should mention, though, that statistics show us that the vast majority of executives in Hollywood are actually conservatives.
Sure, but it's difficult to be an Asian American woman in, you know, I mean, everybody has their difficult experiences. And, you know, one thing that's interesting is being one of the only three or four Asian American people at the Georgia State Capitol, where they actually mix us up. They can't tell us apart. The assumption is everybody works under one Asian rep, and sometimes they mistaken like one legislative aide who's Asian for the actual rep himself. So yeah, it's difficult, but I'm not a very good person to sympathize with that difficulty. So I'll just pass the mic on and plead the fifth on this one.
he has a point. I mean, you have to have a variety of opinions. You have to have intellectual diversity. That said, he did it in a pretty poor way. I mean, you know, the comparison to 1930s Germany, that's
it's always a bad idea.
I don't
idea.
Know
that's
when it became idea. So cool to compare everything to Nazi Germany.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the new thing where we've become Nazi Germany or this is just like the Holocaust.
Because we're normalizing fascism.
Nothing is like that. Like, stop. And I would, it's not cool. Stop using it. It's not okay.
I would go so far as to say that, like, you know, when we look at from a global perspective, what sort of the rights and the liberties and the freedoms of most people around the world, I have very little sympathy for Tim Allen feeling like peer pressure in Hollywood is excluding his opinion because everyone, you know, at the Oscars stands up and makes like some, you know, compassionate speech. I think that, you know, that even characterizing that as some type of oppression is like such a mischaracterization when you look at oppression that actually exists around
the world. I should mention that Tim Allen's net worth is $80 million. So.
But look at what's happened to owners of companies who've come out as conservatives in after the election, have come out of conservatives and even just offered to help the administration, not even to be part of the administration, but to say, maybe I can idea share and get this train back on track. And because of just associating with the conservative movement, they've been vilified. So yeah,
they're victims? Like they're victims?
I think.
Are you implying that they're victims?
No, but I think
I feel like this is going to take us down a road that is going to lead to Hector and Natalie coming to blows. So let's move on to something less political, maybe. Lingering on the Coast is a film and TV website. IMDb has introduced Lingering on the Coast. I guess my producer is saying we're going to stay in Hollywood. Anyhow, the film and TV website IMDb has introduced an F rating. And in this case, it doesn't mean you've gotten the worst grade in class. It's meant to mark films that have female directors, writers, and actors at the helm. And there's different levels of it. You can even get a triple F rating if they get all three of those things. So the question is, how much would this influence you? If you saw a movie with its triple F rating, for example, is your interest in diversity enough to get you to watch that film?
No, I don't think so. Honestly, like that, to me, if it does, then it really taints my ability to almost evaluate it as art on its own. Whenever I see that, whenever I see sort of like interesting, bold moves to include and to increase diversity, which I support and applaud, but really because of the end purpose of diversity, which is to, you know, introduce diverse perspectives and to tell those stories and to have, not just for inclusion's sake, right? So as soon as I feel like if I indulge the fact that there's a marker here and I can click it and that'll tell, you know, that somehow creates a new subcategory for me to pay more attention to, I feel like I'm almost doing a disservice to the entire purpose of diversity.
I'm a Rotten Tomatoes kind of gal, so I don't know that that's really going to influence me. But I will say from a marketing perspective, I don't think that rating it as an F for female is very smart. We will always associate F with a failing grade. And so I think that I would just by association think that that was not a very good film. So I would suggest maybe they do like a W for women or for win or something that makes a little bit more sense.
I don't do ratings because like really epic movies like Hot Tub Time Machine have gotten awful scores in ratings. Like if you ever flipped through and you were like Hot Tub Time Machine sounds awful, but it's going to be amazing, but it's got a 10 splat points on whatever, you would never watch it. And then you would have missed Hot Tub Time Machine.
I missed it.
And
go back.
All because of the ratings. Negative ratings. Never going to watch it.
Right. Okay. If you're just joining us, we're hanging out in the break room. We have with us Ed Sohn of Thomson Reuters, Natalie Dale of the Georgia Department of Transportation, Georgia State University Professor Hector Fernandez, and B. Wynn of Athena's Warehouse. I should mention that Hot Tub Time Machine has a 63% on the tomato meter, which is not that bad.
There you go.
All right. Anyhow, let's move
on. Only because of my advocating for it.
Let's move on.
She clicked a lot.
To travel not using hot tubs, a London-based travel company plans to offer submarine tours next year where you can go down through the ocean and visit the wreck of the Titanic.
I worked my way from place to place, you know, tramp steamers and such. But I won my ticket on Titanic here at a lucky-handed poker. A very lucky hand.
Some pretty bad dialogue there. The cost of each of those voyages is more than $100,000. So would, if you had the money to spend, would you go?
Why would I ever spend all that money to see a chunk of metal in the middle of the ocean? I mean, I can think of a gazillion better ways to spend it. I mean, for one, it's really expensive. Two, the people are dead. Let them remain in peace. I mean, there's really nothing.
is Leo going to be down there? Because if he is, I'm all for it. I'll never let go, Leo.
Let's not start the debate over whether he would have fit on the door.
this is why I love Break Room. It's because Hector is like appalled, and I'm like, ooh, the high school version of myself is like, yes, this is amazing.
I mean, what is that experience exactly? Because I would have personally loved to be in a submarine. In general.
Oh, you just go for
submarine ride.
I feel like you can do that for less than $100,000.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure you could. But, like, you know, what exactly are you seeing outside the window of a submarine? Like, it's not like a cruise ship, right? So, like, see that blurry hunk of metal? That's what was once the Titanic. Now, give me your $100,000. Like that. But I'd love to be in a submarine, though.
See, now, I can just say, as someone who has traveled on a submarine, that's not all that enjoyable. It's, tiny. You're cramped. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyhow. Probably we're going to hear from some people who man submarines that are going to complain. The complaints to CelesteHeadley.com. Okay. Now, speaking of appreciating beauty, a lingerie store in Kennesaw, Georgia, called Liveray Lingerie, was asked to remove ads that featured plus-sized and disabled models. Critics said the ads were in poor taste. The owners refused to take those images down. The corporate property owner then said they could leave them up, but the store has featured a lot of ads in the past, constant ads with skinny models, and gotten zero complaints. So should those ads stay? Should there be restrictions on the size of model that you feature?
Are we gonna let guys take lingerie? Okay, I'll take lingerie. I was like, guys, anybody? No, I am far more offended by. For example, the website for Forever 21, which in price and quality markets to like 16, 14, 15-year-olds, they've got teenagers in lingerie. I am far more offended by the sexualization of teenagers on the Forever 21 website. You can write your complaints if you like Forever 21 to Celeste.
No, not Celeste.
All complaints go to Celeste.
I am far more offended by that than real women wearing something that real women wear.
Right.
Yeah. Or even just emaciated models who really make it complex for every other woman. I mean, body image is a real issue, and working with teenage girls, it is one of the top issues in terms of self-esteem.
Life-threatening, yeah.
Right. And so, you know, you have these girls who don't feel good about themselves, and that increases at-risk behaviors like dropping out of school, depression, cutting, and those are the circumstances and reality in which our girls live in is always not feeling good enough. So I think I'm more offended by that.
That's why they do it at 14, 15, because that's the moment at which they brainwash them and they internalize, you know, a certain condition that tells them constantly, if you're not this way, you're not okay. I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, they should leave whatever they want on, and that's pretty much it. If you want to support a certain type of image, it should be for health reasons, not for aesthetic reasons.
So I agree with all of that, but I'll also say that from a marketing perspective, it seems like it's really a great idea to allow, you know, ads that feature more realistic body shapes. Absolutely. I feel like you'd sell a whole lot more lingerie that way.
I kind of want to know.
It seems like a no-lose proposition.
If it's going to look good on me, not on Giselle, right?
So Target has done this, and I'm just waiting for the backlash on this, but Target has launched their swimsuit line for this season, and on Target's website they have real women unphotoshopped with women who have had children and their stretch marks and women of real size and real shape, and they are in the swimsuits, and I'm just ready for the backlash. But the thing is I want to go to that site and see what a swimsuit will look like on me,
on a real person.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
And I
yeah.
applaud that.
Yeah, you did a great job of marketing that, because I'm gonna get on Target's website after.
I'm looking
Target,
it up.
You can Target can send
I'm
all
looking
Target
it up right now as we speak. Because I want to see it. We are out of time in the break room. I assume the lingerie is gonna look good on the model, right? I just, you don't know if it's going to look good.
Well, she's already starving, right?
Well, maybe. Anyway, we are out of time. I want to say thank you to my guests, Hector Fernandez of Georgia State University, B. Wynn of Athena's Warehouse, Ed Sohn of Thomson Reuters, and Natalie Dale of the Georgia Department of Transportation. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's our show for today, but you know we love to include your voice. Sam Burnham says, why are Victoria's Secret ads in good taste, but reality is poor taste? You know how to reach us on Twitter or Facebook, or call us at 404-500-9457. For today and the week, that is On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great day.